Unemployment is really hard work. When I became unemployed, I was confused because the usual stories around persistence and effort and things just working out didn't match my experience at all. Unemployed people are stereotyped as ne'er-do-wells, layabouts, good-for-nothings, or bludgers, but is that true? In this series, I'll be chatting with 5 unemployed and underemployed people about how they got there, what their lives look like day to day, and why the usual stereotypes don't explain much. You're on 3CR Radical Radio, listening to Lives of the Unemployed, a show about what it's like to be unemployed. Today, I'll be telling the story of Jane, who is a writer, advocate, carer, and single mother of 2. We'll be discussing her experience of unemployment after graduating from university. I'm really excited to share her story because she's really, really similar to my own. And I think she just does an amazing job of articulating how you can just do all the right things, just be a normal person going about doing normal things, and then life just gets a bit shit. Talking on the radio is really scary. So Jane has actually provided written answers for this interview, which is going to be read by 3CR's current affairs editor, Karina. Welcome to 3CR, Karina.
Thank you.
It's wonderful to have you here, and I'm very, very grateful for you stepping in at the last minute to be our voice actor for today.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Antimony, thanks. And I've had a read of the script, and I did want to note that I find it very relatable as well.
Yeah, she does a really, really good job about just putting it into words. Mm. So let's get started. So let's start at the beginning. So let's talk about Jane's employment situation as she was growing up.
She says, I grew up with my single mum, living in housing commission flats, and she worked in a factory to support us. She worked in the same factory for most of my life, and working was definitely a source of pride for her, although it was very hard and she was stressed trying to juggle it with looking after me. Mm. She died when she was only 64 years old.
Mm. Mm. And when you were young, what did you imagine that your career would look like?
I wanted to be a writer and or an artist of some kind from a very young age. Mm. I was a diligent but often distracted student. I think because I was praised for my work and I got good grades, I naively thought that would translate into success of some kind after school.
Yeah, didn't we all? So what was your first real job after that? How'd you get it?
My first real job was in a pub when I was starting my degree at uni. Hmm. My mum's boyfriend knew the owner and arranged for them to give me a go. I'd done a responsible service of alcohol certificate and had been trying for a while unsuccessfully to get a bar job or any job without any experience.
Yeah, isn't it always the way? Yeah. When you're just trying out for the first time, you're trying to get these jobs, all the jobs say you need experience, and then how do you get the experience without having the experience? It's a real catch-22. Yeah. So how did your career unfold after that?
So I spent many years working in bars, shops, call centres, yada yada, to support myself through university. Eventually I did a master's at uni and then I got a scholarship to do a PhD. I also became pregnant with my first child during finishing my master's. Mm. So I had my first baby partway through that. I had a long-term partner and we wanted to have kids, so it felt very stable at that time. Mm. My second baby was born while I was doing my PhD. It wasn't easy, to put it lightly, but I did it.
Yeah, so we're really on the track here. Like, we've got a sense of the future. We've got a master's. We're going towards a PhD. Things are going well. And did you feel like you were progressing towards something, like building up your skills, building up your savings, or was it like you were just mostly staying afloat?
Yeah, I finished my PhD. I thought I was going to become an academic. Mm. That's what everyone kept saying was the pathway that I was on. I just had to somehow get a postdoc, publish a book and several research articles per year, get supervision experience and then I could get a proper academic job.
Mm.
I had some tutoring work during the PhD, but not after it. The unis have to pay the workers at a high rate with the PhD qualification.
Mm-hmm.
So they often have people who are still PhD students teaching the classes. After finishing, it was very hard to find anything.
Yeah.
There were massive cuts across the humanities. Other jobs said I wouldn't want to work there and was, scare quotes, overqualified. Very few jobs and opportunities were being listed in my field, which was literary studies, and it was super competitive.
Looking back, did you feel like you were making choices at the time that they didn't really feel like choices?
There were basically very few opportunities to get those things.
Mm.
There was an assumption you could just easily move to another country to get work.
Yeah, just move country.
I applied for a rare postdoc in my field overseas and I didn't get it.
Mm.
Everything felt like it had started falling apart all at once.
Mm.
I became a single parent. My mum had been diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's.
Mm.
And we were trying to care for her, organize care and legal things. And not that many years after her diagnosis, she died quite young. And I was completely shattered.
Mm.
My kids had also been flagged at school and were getting diagnosed with neurodevelopmental disabilities, a judgmental, expensive, and difficult process.
Mm.
I didn't really know anything about it back then. I just felt so isolated and was really heartbroken, grieving my mum. I just felt so overwhelmed and I got onto the single parenting payment.
Mm, mm. So after all this, these heavy topics, let's take a little bit of a break for a song and then let's get into the present day after that. The song that my guest has chosen for today is Psychotherapy by Shonen Knife, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Has Centrelink made a decision you disagree with? Most Centrelink decisions can be appealed up to 3 times. Examples of decisions you can appeal include whether you're eligible for a payment, cancellation or suspension of your payment, how much you get paid, and Centrelink debts. One of the most common Centrelink decisions appealed are Centrelink debts. Centrelink will say you owe a debt if the staff determine you've been paid more than you should have. Debts can occur for a variety of reasons. In some instances, if there's been an administrative error or if you have special circumstances, you may not have to repay that debt. The appeal process is free, but time limits can apply and will affect your entitlement to back payment. Social Security Rights Victoria is a specialist community legal centre providing Victorians free advice to help you understand your Centrelink issues and the appeal processes. You can contact Social Security Rights Victoria on 9481 0355 or online at ssrv.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
Yeah. When I was new to Melbourne, I found a Food Not Bombs flyer on the road, and I had like this fist with a carrot, and carrots are my favourite vegetable. Yeah, I think they were asking for help doing stuff, and I got in touch.
We, I guess, rescue food
that would otherwise go to waste.
I like the aspect of sharing food and not making anyone feel obligated to pay anything for it.
We make a real point at Food Not Bombs of involving everyone who wants to be involved in whichever part they want to be involved in.
For more information, go to fnbmelb.noblogs.org. Food Not Bombs is a 3CR supporter. Food Not
Bombs. You're listening to a short summer series called Lives of the Unemployed on Radical Radio 3CR. And we're talking about the story of Jane, an advocate, disability advocate, carer, mother of two, and her experience of unemployment after she graduated from university. I've got Karina here, the current affairs editor from 3CR, reading out Jane's responses, and let's get back into it. Just before we do, though, I want to flag that parts of this can get quite heavy, and so I'd like to read out some mental health services lines just for some people who might need some extra support after this conversation. So if you would like some extra support, you can call Beyond Blue on 1300 224 636, or head to Headspace at headspace.org.au, and I'll be reading those out after the show as well. All right, so to get back into it, what parts of unemployment are invisible to people who haven't experienced it?
It's probably all invisible to people who haven't experienced it. The unique circumstances, the barriers, the dehumanizing design of being forced to rely on a payment system that's seemingly always desperate to cut you off. You can't even upload a PDF document to the website, even though all the paperwork forms for download are PDFs. Mm-hmm. Has to be filled out, saved as an image file, one image for each page, often in long form, but not just any kind of image file. It has to be a certain type. Then sometimes it just doesn't even work anyway, and you try multiple times, the website page randomly says, page not found, or you're on hold on the phone forever, and then just get cut off. It's hard enough to do with some degree of computer literacy and English as a first language. I always think of people who are older or disabled, maybe dyslexic or don't speak English. It must feel almost impossible for the people who are actually the most vulnerable.
Mm, absolutely. Yeah. So what do you say when people ask, what do you do?
I always stumble awkwardly, and I don't know what I should say when someone I just met asks, what do you do? Because I know they expect just a one or two word job title. Mm-hmm. And I know it will actually take a while of me trying to explain my situation. Mm-hmm. I say something like, oh, I'm just a mum mainly, or, oh, well, I did a PhD and I have some work. It's kind of tangentially related to that, which came out of it, but it's not like a proper job. I really don't want to tell total strangers that I haven't established any trust with yet that my kids are disabled and that we're struggling to do the normal expectations of life that other people can apparently just manage without a second thought. The question always makes me feel like such a failure, honestly. Mm-hmm. Even though I understand why and I've thought about it all a lot intellectually, I know, but I'm still just trying to undo that feeling.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I absolutely have the same thing. Like, it's when you're growing up and you've got these job options and someone asks, what do you want to be when you grow up? And you say, I want to be a farmer or a fireman or an architect. And it's just such an easy answer. And then you're an adult and it's just like, well, to explain that, I'm going to need like 10 minutes and a paragraph to tell you exactly what's going on here. And it just feels like you're a complicated person who doesn't have like an easy answer to give, and somehow that means that like you're not a real person. Mm. Yeah. And so interacting with this system like dealing with these systems that don't even allow you to upload the paperwork that they force you to do. How do mutual obligations make you feel?
When I was still on the single parenting payments and still trying to apply for a carer payment, my oldest child turned 8 and Julia Gillard, in the same time as her famous feminist speech, had enacted a policy that threw many single mothers into poverty. And this was something I wrote at the time about.
I just want to give a short language warning for this bit.
And as I sat there, an unemployed single mum with my youngest child over 8, in the job prospects waiting room, looking at the poster that said, "Do you enjoy or are you good at English?" with radiating circles filled with different jobs I could do. So what's my problem? And another poster of Martin Luther King with an inspiring quote. I thought, it must be me. I must be a lazy, stupid slut. A lazy, stupid slut with a PhD in English and 2 children to care for all alone while applying for 20 jobs a month and with nobody in my life. Yes, that's it.
There's totally this assumption, I think, in society that if you're in a bad situation, that just means you're a bad person. Like, good people don't get into these kind of situations. There's like some sort of character flaw. There must be something wrong with you for you to even like be in this kind of situation to begin with, right? Okay. Now, let's take a short break after this. I'm going to play you a little song and we'll also listen to this little community service announcement.
Do you have a few children's picture books or footy boots that your kids have outgrown but want to find them a loving home? Well, drop them in at 3CR and put them in the Books and Boots bin. Books and Boots regularly sends pre-loved children's picture books and sports footwear to remote and regional First Nations communities and children across the country. Contact us at Books and Boots or go to the website www.booksandboots.org.au. We love a good book.
My friend's got a girlfriend and he hates that bitch. He tells me every day. He says, man, I really gotta lose my chick in the worst kind of way. She sits on her ass, he works his hands.
that's something everyone can enjoy.
Oh my goodness. And that was Why Don't You Get a Job by The Offspring. All right, now back to our interview for 3CR's summer series, Lies of the Unemployed. We're talking with Jane, a pseudonym, about her experience of unemployment after she graduated with two small children who experienced disabilities. Now, are there things that you're doing now that are work but don't get recognised?
Housework. There's so much of it with kids and it actually takes up a lot of energy. Cooking, special dietary requirements, cleaning, organising, advocating, writing emails, call waiting on phone calls, booking and driving to various appointments, researching and getting all kinds of different things to try and help with various problems from shops, chemists, specialists, doctors. Caring work, it's just seen as expected and natural for mothers, no matter how situations vary beyond imagined norms. It's not ever seen as actual work, even though all these tasks are part of paid jobs that people actually do.
What assumptions do you think that people make about unemployed people?
Stereotypes that unemployed people are lazy, stupid, faking it, deliberately scamming, bludging off taxpayers, that we just aren't trying. Even from your own family, it's hard. They look down on you with disappointment or judgment, but actually have no idea what you're really experiencing and doing and how it's just not the same as their experience. There are, I think, always unacknowledged barriers and nuances and complexities people don't know about, and yet so many people are conditioned to just blame you.
And so if someone was about to become unemployed, if you were talking with someone who was just starting out on their journey of unemployment, what would you want them to know? What do you want to tell them?
Well, that the system is a failure, not you, even if other people can't see that. I know it's hard to hold on to your sense of self-worth, but it's not tied to your employment or your productivity. It's actually inherent. Learning about disability justice has taught me that we're inherently worthy, but it's still hard to escape shame others put on you. People deserve housing and food and human rights. It's actually so disturbing how many people out there apparently don't believe that's true if someone doesn't work.
Thank you so much, Karina, for reading out these responses from my guest, Jane, today. I feel like that's been an absolutely amazing experience. Jane is so articulate about her experiences, and I think her story is a very important one to tell. So you've been listening to a short summer series called Lies of the Unemployed on Radical Radio 3CR. Coming up next is The Black Block. We're going to finish with a song, Work This Time, by King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. But just before we do that, I'm going to read out some numbers for people who might be feeling a little bit vulnerable after we've gone through these heavy topics. So, of course, the first one is Lifeline. We've got Lifeline on 131114. And Beyond Blue at 1300 224 636. And of course there's Headspace at headspace.org.au. If you're feeling a little bit soft after this interview, if you need a bit of extra support, then give one of those numbers a call. And take care of yourself today. Now let's head to a song, and after this you'll be listening to The Black Block. Thank you for today.
Thanks, Antimony, and big thanks to Jane for sharing as well.
Yeah, absolutely.